This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another lovely day here in Honolulu. We are really excited to get here and chat up. Today I have some guests in the studios with us, and it's Kyle Kajihira and Miss Terry Keolani Raymond. And good morning. Yes, ma'am. Terry, thank you, and Kyle, thank you. Terry and Kyle are with the American Friends Services Committee, quite active here in the community, here in the state, on different issues, military issues, Hawaiian rights, and on. Kyle and Terry, could you tell us about the organization and some of the efforts, and through the hour we'll do some talking and share sure. stories. Sure. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Carol. It's actually really nice to be down here in Chinatown this early to see, you know, everybody getting up and getting about their business.
Mm-hmm.
So appreciate the invitation. My name is Kyle Kajihiro. I'm the program director for the American Friends Service Committee Hawaii Area Program. We are a Quaker peace and social justice organization. It was founded by Quakers in 1917 as a nonviolent alternative to serving in the First World War. And here in Hawaii, we got our start during World War II, serving the Japanese who were put in concentration camps, helping out with civil rights issues related to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 68, when the Vietnam War was happening, we got involved in opposing the war and also supporting conscientious objectors, folks who were morally and spiritually opposed to the war.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we've grown into realizing that Hawaii is, at its core, there was a violation of the Hawaiian nation that happened over 100 years ago, and that was driven by U.S. empire and its expansion across the sea and mm-hmm. the militarization. And so that question is really sort of fundamental to many other issues in Hawaii, is dealing with justice for Native Hawaiians, and the military occupation of Hawaiian lands is sort of at the center of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is part of what we do in Hawaii, is address the military impacts on Hawaii, but also the consequences of that militarization on our neighbors in the region, because Hawaii was the place where the Vietnam War was waged from.
Mm-hmm.
And as the headquarters of the Pacific Command, we're the brain of the monstrous he'e, as our friend Kalekoa describes it, the giant octopus. We're the head, and the tentacles are grasping other countries around our region. So we have a responsibility to address problems locally as well as internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, in a nutshell, what we work on.
And Terry, how do you fit into the picture? I know you're quite active. Every event that I attend, I see you there. So how do you, and what do you do? What's your role with American Friends?
I'm a program coordinator at American Friends Service Committee. I work with Kyle. I do demilitarization work and Hawaiian sovereignty rights, or Kanaka Maoli sovereignty rights work, and also work on women's issues.
And I might add that Terry's longtime activist in the Hawaiian community. She was involved in some of the really important struggles at Kalama, Waiahole Waikane, and also Kaho'olawe. So she brings all of that knowledge and experience to the work, and we're really grateful that she has joined our team as
right.
an organizer.
Well, seeing a lot of the work and what you do, and it parallels to some of the things that I do, and oftentimes people label you, me, and others as anti-American or just radicals or what have you. But the reality is we're just seeking justice.
That's right.
And when someone put you in a, tried to pigeonhole you to say what you are, this is an effort to make things fair and equitable to all people. And I also noticed that on your website you do the lesbian and gay community issues and what have you, and the rights mm-hmm. of those, and we'll talk about some of that. But when you reaching out to help people and to make things better and make things right or pono, then how easy is it to be labeled as a radical? So you become suspicious, or I do, when no one willing to listen, and you're just speaking to the injustices that exist.
When I was involved in Koho'olawe, this is back in the 70s, people during that time, you know, said, this is just an example, yeah, you won't win, you know, you're going up against the tide, you know, try to find a way to work within the institution. Try to work with the military and mm-hmm. try to convince them to stop the bombing, you know. That didn't work,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think that the vision of our people stepping forward and asserting their rights to Malama, to take care of the Aina, meant that they had to do extraordinary things, and that is to occupy the island and to make a point that they were very serious about Malama Aina, to take care.
Mm-hmm.
And so during that period of time, it's uncomfortable, there's controversy, but nevertheless, look what happened. People turned mm-hmm. around and they saw that the issue and the concepts and values that we had were worth fighting for. And that's part of a legacy in the Hawaiian Islands. It's one of the things that's contributed, I believe, to the strength of our Native Hawaiian sovereignty movement. Mm-hmm. And that is that sometimes you have to do extraordinary things in order to get the results that you need. Of course, all of this, as American Friends Service Committee, we do through, you know, discussion, persuasion, you know, we talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And but we also go forward, and there's sometimes when you have to go through civil resistance in order to get your point.
And, you know, anytime when people are trying to make a change from a status quo that's unjust and oppressive, there's going to be that kind of reaction, I think. And in the Japanese community, there's a saying, the nail that gets, that sticks up gets hammered down. I think that happens a lot here in Hawaii. It's like, you know, just shut your mouth, just go out, get along with things, and that's how we'll stay alive. And maybe that's a legacy from the days when we were under the plantation rule,
yeah.
where if you did stick your head up, you get smashed down. And during the war, when Japanese were the targets, you know, right now it's people of Muslim, Arab descent that's getting racially profiled as terrorists. Back then, Japanese were the enemy aliens. And so, you know, there's a historical basis for people to be afraid, to be paranoid about being active. But you know, that if you look back at history, you see that that's the only thing that has ever really changed things, right? Frederick Douglass is one of my great all-time heroes. You know, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. If you're not speaking out against an unjust situation, even at some risk, you're not going to make things better. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's been true throughout history, I think.
Well, for me personally, I would love to find the problem and turn to our legal system and turn to our agencies that are the regulators and trust in them that they would do the right thing. There really wouldn't be a need for concentration camps or confinements or racial profiling, because in this nation, supposedly, it's a nation of laws. So if everybody followed the law and applied it, no discrimination, no racism, no profiling,
mm-hmm.
no attacks, no confinement, unlawfully search and seizure. But we can't trust that.
No overthrow.
So,
yeah.
You know, and so when you then turn and say, well, you know, this is what is being preached and this is what I've been told as a child, This is a free nation, and we want to build it, and everyone is free. So when we deviate from that, no one should be called a radical because they want to effect a change.
Well, yeah. It was that spirit of change that America was born from, right? It was to resist a tyrannical situation.
How and soon we forget.
And, you know, a lot of people around the world are resisting that kind of situation mm-hmm. imposed by the U.S. as mm-hmm. As this global empire now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, you know, I think that's what Hawaii, one of the lessons that Hawaii has to teach the world is that it is possible to have a nonviolent resistance to empire. I mean, Hawaii's is a sovereign country that was occupied 116 years ago. For military purposes, and we're dealing with those, consequences today. So is there a way for America to redeem itself by rolling back the tentacles?
Or righting wrongs that it has inflicted.
Exactly.
And so unless you're going to simply have continual chaos if you, for example, you educate people. Let's just mm-hmm. say you start off educating them, you send them to college and you teach them and you welcome them into the system. And then you seize their lands. I just had a recent experience in the last month. I was out on the beach filming where I could legally be. And I had they had the military vessel that had sank.
Off of Waimanalo.
Yes, off of Waimanalo. I was legally there. I was permitted to be there by the park officials. But I was approached by the United States Air Force military policeman. Big guys, I mean, they were already big. The guy was big, right? So it was overkill. He had a gun. And every once in a while, he would motion, put his hand on his gun. You know, there are certain stances of the basket weave or the modified basket weave stance that you... But he came to tell me that I must leave because I was violating. But while I'm standing there, just simply photographing where I could legally be, he tells me to leave. But while telling me... Other people were able to move forward, go into the zone, do whatever, mm-hmm. because I had a camera, but they had cameras. Mm-hmm. But I guess it was because I was Carol Cox, or I don't know what the reason was. I suspect many, but nonetheless, that's one of the problems here locally. And I'd like you guys to speak about that. What does it do? We have a population, a million or so here occasionally, with the tourists and all, at any given time. And we're confined to certain areas, and most of the areas, the beaches, or a lot of the critical areas are owned by the military. So the public is forced to go to certain areas, and here they have Bellows.
Mm-hmm.
They have Iroquois Point, or that's controlled, was, and you have Hickam and that whole area. So,
well, I mean, land is central issue here in Hawaii, and
mm-hmm.
we're such a small place that it's at a premium, you know, and a little island like Oahu, you have nearly a quarter of the land is controlled by the military.
Mm-hmm.
So that squeezes everyone else into the remaining portions, and if you're not one of the big, you know, corporations or landowners in Hawaii, you're squeezed into an even smaller section,
mm-hmm.
and no wonder there's so much congestion and crowding, but much of the military lands are off, you know, out of limits, out of sight, and people don't realize that it's there or it's controlled by the military.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of how this game gets played. It's hidden in plain sight. It's all around you, but
mm-hmm.
you can't see it because you've just become sort of immunized to being able to detect what's going on. And so we describe the situation often like being in the Matrix, like the film The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a reality that looks real, sort of tastes real, seems like everything's really great, but it's an illusion over a violent infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need to poke holes into that illusion in order to see through to the other side. And that's part of the work that we do, is to point out, you know, this is how much land was stolen from Hawaiians, from the Hawaiian nation. This is what is happening to these lands, is a contamination. And here's where access is being denied, you know, to some of the most prime real estates, prime beaches, recreational
mm-hmm.
areas. Why? Because, you know, the military wants their golf, they want their beach cottages, you know, that you or I, if you don't have that pass, don't get that privilege. So
mm-hmm.
there's more privileges for military than people from here, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Terry?
Yeah, they wanted to the first and biggest gated communities, aren't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 2 points for me that come to my mind. One is that when you begin, for especially Kanaka Maoli, when you begin to put up the fence, you know, when you begin to restrict access, there are places that traditionally our people have gone to do their ceremonies that are sacred to them. For example, like Mokopo, Kaneohe Marine Air Station, once a very big burial area. When you begin to lose your access to these sites, you begin to lose your memory,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the place and its sacredness and what it meant to the people. Plus, you begin to lose your view, literally, your view, your vista, you know, of a place. And so I think that's one of the impacts of militarization and its restrictions, yeah.
The erasure of culture.
The erasure of culture. But the other thing, too, is that after 9-1-1, maybe prior to 9-1-1, or even going back to, you know, World War II, during that period of time, once you have occupation and people are getting used to it, there's a certain, like, rapport, you know, you don't go here, you don't go there, and everybody is understanding. But since 9-1-1, the militarism or the reaction to people has been one of more aggression,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you're seen now as a terrorist if you, you know, come close to the gate, you know. And so I think that the nature of how we're being treated now is very, very, very spooky. I'm thinking of an incident up in Kauai, where a guy who's actually a person from Kauai, a local guy, was taking pictures close to the Nohili base,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and suddenly he has these guys chasing after him and telling him something similar to your, you know, experience, that he can't go there, or he can't do this, and he said, "I'm taking a video of the beach."
He works with kids, and they were surfing, doing a video for the cable
mm-hmm.
access.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, there are private guards that are guarding the military post there. And he was treated very, very badly,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think there's something about that we have to address in the community.
I firsthand experienced the arrogance. And it parallels or reminds me of the treatments in Mississippi, honestly.
Mm. Mm.
And keep in mind now, a lot of the guys that are in the military with rank and what have you are from Oklahoma, Mississippi, and those areas who haven't really cleansed themselves and fully understand the sensitivity of a community. So they are brought here, given the orders. And so what seems to be happening is that under the banner of Homeland Security, they then invoke or initiate this practice freely. It's racial discrimination. It's an injustice. How do you say to one community in Bellows area, in Waimanalo or wherever, that this beach area is closed? We're not shooting rockets and bombs. We're not housing any sophisticated military equipment, to my knowledge. And yet, a person can bring their parent. Now, this is where it gets really bad. You can bring your aunt, your uncle, your cousin, if you're in the military, and bring them to the beach and hang out. They could be a terrorist. They could be a spy. They could be from Yugoslavia, anywhere. And yet, they could be Russian. Who knows? They have the right to roam freely because their relative is in the military. Yet, local people, when I say local, I mean everybody in Hawaii, are restricted and watched. Now, to add insult to injury, on another occasion, I was there on an official invite where they were having, I think you and Kyle were there on the landfill removal,
yes.
the pier.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're there, we're taking pictures, and no one's complaining. But as we were exiting, I take a picture of the gate where the tourists come in and out, right? Or the beach goers and the people. I had the captain to tell me, "Well, you're going to have to destroy those films, those pictures. You took a picture of my booth, my entry booth here."
Mm-hmm.
Now, while she's telling me that, a couple people in cars drove up, took a picture of the sign. I didn't see her get frantic. I didn't hear any sirens go off or anything. So you can see where... they applied, and that's the sad part of this. This is where I guess it's an insult.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you guys, how do you keep this fight up? For example, you know, they take the land or took the land, and then you have this ray of hope where they say, well, we'll give it back to the Native Hawaiians. Take Barbara's Point, for example, or Kalailoa. Look what happened to that. That was an active military site.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that went back to the people
of that land? Very little.
So here's an opportunity. So where do you get your motivation to keep, I mean, when there can be right without protests and everything, and you think the regulator is going to regulate, how do you see through all this and every morning get up and say, we're going to fight this fight, and then when there's a chance that Iroquois Point, for example, they could have given it back. But what did they do? They gave it to somebody.
Private developer.
Yeah,
make some money.
How are you encouraged? Where do you get your spunk from? I would be at some point.
I think you get encouragement from the people of the community and from the Aina itself. I mean, you know, if you are tuned into the Aina as a living entity, mm-hmm. it speaks to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has knowledge and history that goes way before, longer, much older and much wiser than I am, if I'm only paying attention to it. And that's mm-hmm. part of what I think Hawaiians had traditionally, that a wisdom about how to be in balance with their environment,
mm-hmm.
where you know, you come in, the colonizers, and that process is sort of devoid of that. Mm-hmm. So it's all about owning, taking, buying, selling, making money off of it, when it's like, that's your sacred relationship. You
yeah,
know?
But these are the people that go to your neighborhood boards with their public relations person from the military and make great promises and then in turn and stab you in the back.
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, that's why they always fail, is that they show their ignorance or arrogance of their power in the community. I mean, it's historically become really clear that we can't trust what the military says. Even if there's a really good person that comes to your neighborhood board and really believes what they're telling you, it's an institution. You know, it has values and mm-hmm. Interests that it's pursuing, that they can tell you anything and something else can happen. I mean,
right.
This is what we found with depleted uranium. Mm-hmm. For years we asked, have you used it? You know, should we be concerned? Army said, never used it. We don't have a permit to use it. And then it has to come to us in a email that we get from someone through a lawsuit that says, oh, yeah, we found depleted uranium and chemical weapons buried up in Schofield.
Right.
And so why was it that we had to find out through this other channel? You know, and then it comes to find out there's more depleted uranium contamination up in Pohakuloa and possibly in Makua. Mm-hmm. So they were using this secret weapon here in Hawaii, never told us about it, mm-hmm. lied to us for many decades, and then, oops, yeah, well, we've got some of this radioactive waste that we've contaminated your environment with.
Well, on that note, I'm going to take a break, but I have Kyle Kajihira,
Terry Kikolani,
with the American Friends Services. This is the Carol Cox Show. I'm going to do one thing here, as I had promised. I'm going to give away 5 books of the copies of the Super Ferry, and I'm going to start today. You can call 524-1080, and I'll give out one today. If you give a call, I'll call a number 6 if you want to play the numbers game, or give us a call, 524-1080, and you can get a copy free of the Super Ferry Chronicles. And Kyle, you're also in here. You have a passage in here you've written.
Oh, I have a short article about just an overview of the military and resistance in Hawaii.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with you. You can pick us up at carolcox.com podcast.
If you're like me, you're looking for ways to save money on gas and help the environment. That's why you want to know about the EPA smart driving tips. Tips that could give you more miles per gallon of gas and reduce air pollution, like making sure your tires are properly inflated and replacing your air filter regularly. Oh, where possible, accelerate and brake slowly. Slowly. And did you know that for every 5 miles you go over 65 miles per hour, you're spending about 20 cents more per gallon of gas? Also, if you're shopping for a new car, choose the cleanest, most efficient vehicle that meets your needs. If we each adopt just one of these tips, we'd get more miles for our money and breathe a little easier. For more tips and to compare cleaner, more efficient vehicles, visit www.epa.gov/greenvehicles.
Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Again, I have American Friends Services here with me, Kyle and Terry. We were talking as we left depleted uranium and other issues. Here's something that sticks in my craw, and I'm at times uneasy when I see our senators, our local senators, Senator Noy, Mr. Kaka, Mr. Abercrombie, and Ms. Toronto, they come back and they tell us about the pork. They brought back sow belly and everything, you know, you name it. They parade it out. But one thing I've noticed that is missing, and I applaud them for getting the pork, but there's a problem. You haven't seen an increase. You see an increase in military activity, airplanes, construction. But you've not seen any increase in staff at the EPA who would regulate or inspect or investigate the impacts and try to mitigate them. You've not seen a single increase in the staff here in EPA. You haven't seen a single increase in dollar amount that worth something in the Fish and Wildlife Service. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen a single increase in the staffing of that would be focusing and monitoring military and National Marine Fisheries Service. So I won't say it's a conspiracy. I would say it's a flagrant oversight on the part of our senators. Bring us the bacon, but also bring us the mitigating measures as well with it. So $60 billion for military should be part of that, should be $300 million for investigations, oversight through EPA, Fish and Wildlife Service, and others, and also funding to the state to regulate. What do you think?
Well, if you eat McDonald's every day,
mm-hmm.
you might get your calories, but it's going to clog your arteries eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get, your liver is going to swell up, and you're going to get sick, and you might die. And I think that a military pork economy is an addictive type of economy, because it's always on that short term, like how we're going to get our next fix, how we're going to build that next, you know, mm-hmm. barracks or range or anything like that. But it's not looking at the long term costs and who's, you know, who's getting paid and who pays the price.
Right.
They're not the same folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
The folks who are getting paid are, you know, the big companies, the industries that benefit from that inflow of money, the defense contractors, definitely, especially on Kauai when you're talking about missile defense. You know, but who's paying the price, you know, are the people living in the toxic shadow of the bases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you got clouds of dust contaminated with depleted uranium, RDX, HMX, heavy metals, you know,
mm-hmm.
flying over the range in, or downwind, you know, in from Wahiawa, that's who's paying the price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the folks whose land is being taken away, the
mm-hmm.
folks whose sacred sites are no longer accessible. And so their kids will never get to see or chant that chant
right.
to that place, right? That's
right.
all cultural genocide that's taking place over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so those price, you know, no one puts a dollar amount on that.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the Chamber of Commerce press release or the Senator Inouye's press release that brags about all this money that's coming in, they're not looking at all the costs that somebody else is picking up
mm-hmm.
for that price tag. So that's you know, one thing. I think the other thing is that this kind of economy is not sustainable. And if we're really, you know, looking to develop and diversify, let's reinvest in education, in alternative energies. I mean, that's going to be the wave of the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but instead we keep putting money into old industries that just get us again a quick fix, but it's gonna kill us.
Terry, what do you think about the pork? And how is it affecting, what's your view of it? How is it affecting us?
I think it gets back to fundamentally, and this is what Americans are say that they're all about, and that is the way in which decisions are made. Yeah, I think that's mm-hmm. an important thing. In the case of the Striker Brigade, when we first got involved and in our campaign, I came to the realization that decisions had already been made far in advance of public hearings.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be the opposite, where the community is called out to look at proposed plans and to, you know, give feedback on what they think and what they're willing to take or what is it they're willing to adjust to. But in this case of the Striker Brigade, decisions have already been made, contracts were already put into place. And so, to me, it becomes a matter of what is this thing called democracy,
mm-hmm.
American democracy,
mm-hmm.
if all of these arrangements are made way in advance. And why do you have public hearings if they don't really mean anything?
Well, you do get 1 minute to talk.
No, you get a chance to talk. No, you get a chance to talk. But what happens is that you and your concerns are suddenly classified as mitigatable,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so there's no real, democratic process in place at all.
It's predecided.
It's all predetermined.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, your earlier question was what keeps you getting up in the morning and doing what you do? And that is, I think we've seen people actually become conscious of this.
Mm-hmm.
And consciousness to the point where they're saying, this cannot continue to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, therefore, they, we coalesce, we ally, and we, you know, expose what's going on, and then we make decisions on how we're going to combat this, you know, kind of decision-making process. I don't think people realize how powerful Senator Inouye is. And And when you're talking about the pork, we're talking about him being the third-ranking senator in the United States that has a very, very powerful position right now.
Mm-hmm. And if I could add to the food metaphor, you know, too much of a good thing will give you a heart attack. You know, too much of the good life. And I think Hawaii has had a diet of that kind of fat since the war. I mean, it was an infusion that came in. It changed the economy in a fundamental way. But people got used to it being at that level mm-hmm. of growth and acceleration. And we see the fruits of that is a destruction of our quality of life. You know, the freeways are clogged, you know, literally. If those are the arteries of our system, right. It's not working, right? And so when you reach a point of a chronic heart disease, mm-hmm. you got to do some radical changes in your diet to detox that stuff. You can't continue. And I think that's what we're realizing is that we reached a certain point of not being sustainable anymore. We got to change course and start putting some resources, some energy into developing these alternatives. Why aren't we putting the workforce to work restoring our environment so that we have clean water, you know, mm-hmm. for the next 100 years, mm-hmm. instead of cutting down forests and building more homes and things like that. I mean, there's things that we could be investing in to create public jobs that actually help our long-term security as opposed to giving us short-term high with long-term consequences.
And that is a very important thing, and that is a working people, a working class of people who do need to have a healthy economy in order to, you know, have a quality of life. This is a very big question for all of us. Many of us have family who are in the military. I mean, that's a fact of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to sit down and talk to each other about how do we begin to make the changes that that Kyle is talking about. It's not easy, but you have to have vision, and I think you have to have perseverance in order to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, stealing another food metaphor, the way this military thing goes is that it's as if they have a big hamburger and they're sitting there, and it's dripping, the juice is dripping down their cheeks while the hungry people sit and watch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beach scenario.
Yeah.
And that's the land scenario. And here we are, people are homeless and being forced out while there is land that lay vacant
right.
at Kalailoa.
Right, exactly.
Land that could have been given back, the Iroquois Point. There could have been a different approach. They could have elevated the houses to two stories and built. And now some out there are going to argue, well, what do you want? You want the government in your life. Well, the government is in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it is part of this equation, a big part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the bigger problems that right. all of us have. I think it's some people like to say, well, it's a Hawaiian problem. Well, it's not a Hawaiian problem because I know factually that many, for example, the current forces, National Guards, are serving in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
right? What are they fighting for? America. They're from Hawaii, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they deserve, and their families deserve an opportunity. So this, I'm always puzzled as to what I see, and I just get uneasy when I see them saying, well, we brought more bacon, more pork back today. And you don't see Abercrombie or anyone say, and we also, as I've said earlier, we've also increased our special agent force, our scientist force,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be do it independent. But instead, it's you and people like myself and Isla, William Isla, and then you have to go to the Earth Justice and file an action. When, in fact,
that's government's job.
That's the government's
yeah.
job, and so it's this the EPA, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Marine Fisheries Service, throw the community, throw the Native Hawaiian community to the dog, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and they have to fend for themselves while they sit back, and then they are the ones who's actually doing the Section 7 consultations, the Section 10, the Section 9s, and on and 6. And all.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, do they communicate with you guys openly? The Fish and Wildlife Service, EPA, or NOAA, do they contact you?
No, I don't think they've called us unless I've asked for them to
call
me.
And see how it's structured. Even if you wanted something from them, you got to file a FOIA, and that takes
right.
It takes eons. So, you know, when people see you on TV or others and they say, oh, there they go again, but you got to understand, the listeners probably don't understand how sophisticated and complicated this thing is and how deeply deprived you are. There's just simply, other than standing out and holding signs and really no true means other than going and having a lawsuit, and you know how that takes. Makua is on again, off again, back again, and they still get their way.
Well, that's the only way that the Army was going to, you know, do what they should have done, which is to provide information about their impacts in the valley. They refused, you know, and so the community had to take them to court to force that out. And like you mentioned about getting information, I have some FOIAs that are maybe 3 years old with the Navy to get documents about the proposed university-affiliated research center, the classified research lab that students were concerned about. You know, it's tied to a criminal investigation, maybe criminal investigation. They won't release all the documents to us because they say it's classified.
Yeah, well, don't talk about the I'm, again, co-conspirators as far as I'm concerned. Every time I've wanted something from the UH, it seems to be the military finds its way to the scientists. So usually in a community, it's the university who is there helping the community because it's neutral, right? But instead, you go to the university and you might as well show up with a red dot on your forehead that say, I'm a terrorist, I'm an activist. Something is lost in this state with all of the elements that should be in place.
You know, this is a conversation that happened early on when people were beginning to find out about the UARC. And community people were meeting and were saying, gee, you know, how do we stop this thing? It's going to, you know, basically assist in the military's activities that destroy Hawaiian lands. So how do we stop this thing? And one person who was there, who was sympathetic, but, you know, she just like laid it out and said, well, you know, they're going to cut off our health, funding for Hawaiian health, education, all of these things if we go up against this thing, because everybody knows he wants it.
Right.
It's going to come down. So that's how, you know, it's almost like gangster kind of politics is the way things get forced on you, you know, because this is what we want to have happen, right? And you're going to accept it with a smile.
I tell you something, and folks may not like this, but I hear, in my line of work, I hear Senator Inouye's name more than I hear God. No exaggeration. No exaggeration. I can go and talk to the university, I can talk to the military, I can talk to a state agency, and they will say, well, you know, Senator Inouye, he's not going to go for that.
Right.
I never hear, well, you know, because it's right and God say that the dictators that do good to all people, be honest, be right. You don't hear that.
Right.
Serious. Just the other day I did an investigation, and the first thing I said, well, you know, he's a friend of the Senator Inouye. What does that have to do with anything? And we have barrels of oil and contaminants laying on the ground, state land that is being used with no pay. Mm. But the first thing out of his mouth, we'll have to get back to you, because he's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
well, you know, when we asked the folks out in on Waianae and some of these Hawaiian communities have always been complaining about high rates of cancer and other diseases. And so anecdotally, it's sort of that's the impression that people have. But when we asked the state for the data, it was just a simple question. What's the, you know, what's the cancer rate out in Waianae versus the rest of Hawaii? They won't break it down by zip code. And they're setting privacy laws for this. But then when you ask the agencies, well, what kind of studies have you done to see whether or not certain communities are impacted by environmental contamination or environmental factors. No one can tell you this because they're not looking. It's like they put the blinders on intentionally. And I think it's because, you know, you're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. Right.
Well, also they fall right. Well, you know, it's a privacy matter, medical issues. We can't talk about that, you know, and can't disclose that. So you're just simply, if the people only knew. See, they're sitting at home, and they hear occasionally that you or I are out there asking questions, and, well, okay, why don't you let the military alone? No, they're all actually being impacted.
Yeah.
You know, so, anyway, you were talking about a program that's coming up, or a seminar or something?
Right. Well, I just wanted to add that one of the areas of work that we do is to network with international groups and movements that are dealing with similar kinds of problems. I mean, the Philippines has contamination problems. Even though their bases are gone, people are getting sick. Okinawa and Korea, Japan, people are protesting. In Guam, they're facing an onslaught of militarization that's going to decimate the people there. And so there's an international network of movements against foreign military bases, and the U.S. will be hosting a conference. U.S. peace groups will be hosting a conference February 27 to March 2nd in Washington, D.C., called Security Without Empire. Mm-hmm. Basically, to bring together groups that are concerned about war and peace issues, but also the militarization and military bases and their negative impacts on the people and the environment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to meet in Washington, share their concerns, and try to make an impact on the administration.
How do they get information on this? Is this on your website?
Yes, it's on our dmzhawaii.org.
dmzhawaii.org.
Yes.
Okay, and they can find that information.
Right.
Terry, you were going to chime in earlier. What was it? So we were talking about the military and its the pork and coming in and the contaminants and people not understanding.
Right.
Right.
You guys, there they go again. And as I said earlier, I get a little nervous when I hear there they go again, when you're not asking to be paid for anything. You're asking to show the records. If you're using depleted uranium, it affects us all. It also, it affects the soldiers that are training with it. And when they get out of the Army or return and come up with cancer or what have you, or problems, who do they turn to?
Right.
The point I was going to make a little earlier was that when you go into the community and you talk about the issues that we do, you know, the impact of the military in the community, just being among the people, people talk.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about, if you go to that place in that area, we see that there's something happening to people. There are deaths, you know, related to cancer,
mm-hmm.
more than, you know, another area,
mm-hmm.
right? And so my point is that going into the community, talking to people, people observe, people talk among each other. And so I think what we do is we actually tap in mm-hmm. to that. And where they give voice to their complaints, you know, I think that's where we also play a role, and that is to help, you know, to mm-hmm. get them to the right people to talk to, or mm-hmm. in the right situations.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my last point, is that there's no way that this is going to be hidden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are going to, women in particular, who are very sensitive, you know, to environmental contaminations in particular, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
They talk to one another, and they're going to raise things to a level where you just can't hide it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's part of what we do, is we go out into the community and we listen, and, you know, we dialogue between each other and have inter-island kind of communications as well.
All right. I got one caller here. Bob, you there?
Yes, I
yeah,
am. Sir.
Real quick, we're winding down on time, so. You're breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I say vote for the guests you have there, seem pretty young. The only way to cure this problem is to get rid of these politicians that have been in there 15 and 20 years, because you know they're corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way these guys would even have a chance if somebody listens to them. Like he says, he goes to this department, that department, he constantly gets a no answer or, you know, some BS line. Okay, but now, the only way you can go to that, like, say I have a politician, like, in my district. If he's there just one term, he has no alliances to anybody but the people. And that's the people who would get elected, because that would be part of the protocol, only one term. So the guy knows that mm-hmm. politician knows that when he's going in there, it's only for that one term. He's going to do as much as he can for the people and not for his concerns of other people that he gets in there. When soon as he goes two or three terms, he's already got these already backdoor deals, and every one of them has them. I know, because I've been around enough politicians mm-hmm. to see how they change from the first day they're in until, like, 10th year they're in, they're different people. They're already connected, And they don't trust a little guy like me, you, or anybody in Y&I Coast or whatever. Look at this guy in Stevens, another one that knows Annoy and the Akata. They're all connected. We got to get them guys. They are the problem. That's all I can say. You guys have a good, and I wish you luck.
Hey, Bob.
Thank you so much, Bob, and thank you for calling us, Young.
Give us your address. You get this book, The Super Fairy Chronicles.
Okay.
Off air, give me your address there, and Francis will take that.
For my library, you know what? When people kind of weird answers.
All right. Well, this is the Kuhan Pak and Jerry Mann of the Super Fairy Chronicles. I encourage it. And you notice now... The guys that were predisposed with the answers earlier, I hadn't heard from them, and I offered to give them 5 books. So much for opinions and the unwillingness to educate themselves. So.
Well, when I get it, I'll pass it around. I assure you, the knowledge will be disseminated. That's what I'm into.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Kyle, you were going to, real quickly, we're going to be wrapping. We got about 4 minutes, but go ahead.
I just want to make a plug for the Super Fairy Chronicles, not because of my piece in it, but because it's really a great document of the voices of the people. And rarely, you know, do you have, like we were talking about earlier, you go to these hearings and people have eloquent testimony, and then it gets buried in the back of some document and put on a shelf, and you never see it again.
Mm-hmm.
Here, they've captured the voices and the actions of the community who said enough already. They got fed up with these kinds of decisions, you know, being forced down on them, and have exposed a huge, you know, a kakio, a big sore, that where many of these issues we were talking about today come together. I mean, you have the corruption, you have the military contractors sort of interest in this thing, you have the government giving away the goods to help their rich, wealthy friends, you know, you have political connections, you have all kinds of stuff, and people mm-hmm. doing courageous things to protect their environment, protect their community. Mm-hmm. So really encourage folks to you know, check out the book and tell others about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. The environmental impact statement is coming up, due the February 23rd.
Right.
And I've found some interesting stuff I share with you real quick. There is a situation where they were told by the state legislators to get an incidental take permit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, it didn't happen. They've been operating without one, and I met with NOAA, and... they said the reason they didn't need one is that they didn't have a federal agency with a nexus. Nobody gave them a permit or regulate them, so therefore they were exempt, which is erroneous because the Food and Drug Administration regulates them and give the approval. So on the 1250. But anyway.
So, I think... I mean, the other federal nexus, I think, is the loan guarantee. I mean, that's $140 million that the taxpayers are underwriting this, you know, this private company, so that John Lehman and his investors, mm-hmm. you know, can make their profit.
Right. I mean, well, you know, it's so many things, and you want to come back, and then this next month I'm going to be doing community things and just sitting talking, and because we don't get our chance, and like we talked earlier, you get 1 minute to go to these military meetings or public meetings, and what can you say or do in 1 minute? Yes. While there's maybe 20, 50, 30 people, 40, you know, higher, sitting there competing for that same time. So they come with their presentation, they do their thing, and they get hours, and you get minutes.
Yep.
So anyway, I appreciate you guys joining me, and, you know, we've had a couple of issues. Did you see the salt in the food? We uncovered that there's road salt being used in Lau Lau and Lummi Lummi Salmon. So go to carolcox.com, and you can see the stores and businesses that were selling this product. And, folk, I encourage you to do take a look. That's carolcox.com. And you can look on the commentary and see the list, and I encourage you, because in the San Francisco Bay where this salt originates, mercury, sewage, and other contaminants, and they know that you shouldn't be using it. So anyway, there's just so many, and I appreciate you guys joining me, Terry and
Thank
Kyle.
You.
And
Mahalo for having us.
And we'll have to get back together and keep up the good fight. And this is the Carol Cox Show, and thank you for joining us.
Phil
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.